You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Some of us spend so much time at work that it can begin to feel like a second home, but of course it's not. And lots of things can cause tension with coworkers, as they sometimes do with family members. So whether you're the one who is irritated by others wherever you work, or whether it's in an office or in a cafe, or if you're the offender, now's your time to seek advice, because Philip Galanis is with us again. He writes the witty and wise Social Cues column in the Sunday Style section of the New York Times, and I'm always pleased when he can join us on this show. Hello, Philip.
Hi, Leonard. Happy to be back.
We have many options for you to join in on this conversation. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Philip, do you typically get a lot of complaints about inconsiderate fellow workers?
A huge number, Leonard. And so many of them are very hard to answer, because at work, context is like not only the king, it's the entire royal family. So without understanding all the ins and outs of authority levels and personality types and things like that, it can be very hard to give useful advice. So I'm very happy that we're doing this today, because we can really tease out with particularity what's going on.
Because we're talking to the people although a lot of people have written in, by the way, and we'll get to those as well. I would think another problem is that the best way to decide what should be done is to actually observe for a little while, because one person's idea of an intolerable situation is the next person's idea of, oh, that isn't so terrible.
Right. It's like a perfect storm of open plan situations, and then the revolution of openness that Oprah and Phil Donahue and all those folks brought in. We are very free. We are very free to say things now. We need to get things off of our chests in a way that we didn't used to at the office.
And now we're doing them in open offices where there's very little privacy in many cases.
Absolutely.
There's a kind of assumed intimacy with that kind of a layout. Yeah. And also, you're all on the same team, but you might not like a certain person.
Right. Well, we're also working and available to our colleagues. So many of us are working and available to our colleagues around the clock, because we can't bear to put aside the temptation of our phones and our work emails and texting and sharing on social media. So we're always with them. They do start to feel, the woman in the cubicle next to me starts to feel like more than a coworker. I mean, it's almost sad in a way. It's one of the few sad things that we've lost since the days of Don Draper and Mad Men, that idea that there was a clear authority line. And when I started working, it was really clear. For him, you had to knock on his door before you went in. For him, you needed an appointment. You couldn't even just knock on the door. Now, all that's collapsed in a kind of fantasy of equality that makes people think every time that it's the person sitting next to them has a lunch that is not fragrant to them, they need to be up in arms about it and share their complaint.
And that, you've already hit upon a number of the things that people have written in. I want to start off by saying that as of this morning, we got more emails from listeners about this topic than we've ever gotten before.
I think we've obviously struck a nerve.
And we'll take calls as well. Our number, 212-433-9692.
It's sensational. It's a sensational thing.
Well, there's the matter of when someone talks too loud on the phone, whether they're doing work or not, and it disturbs your concentration because of the openness. Jason from Manhattan wonders about asking a person to deal with personal calls elsewhere.
Well, I don't think that is reasonable, considering that we are in the office, most of us, from something like 9 in the morning until 7 or 8 at night. It's not some time will be spent. So rather than – it also – in my experience, this is only in my experience, so Jason might find somebody else to tell him something else. It never works. People really hate to have their personal behavior complained about. So if there's any way you can work out a solution, it would be fine for Jason to say, you know, sometimes we're sitting so close to each other. Sometimes I really hear your personal conversations and I feel like I'm an eavesdropper. And I hope that when you inevitably hear my personal conversations, you'll feel free to come over to me and let me know. Then you have an equality going on. You're not a griper. You've got a problem that the shared space will necessarily create, and you fixed it too.
Well, along these lines, Skatity asks, I sit in an open cubicle. A coworker has an office with a door across from my cubicle. The coworker speaks incessantly on the telephone with her family in Tagalog, the national language of the Philippines. After a particularly lengthy conversation and rapid fire, loud Tagalog, she interjected, "What did the gyno say?" I smiled, pointed to my ear, and gently pulled her door closed. And the result was that she flipped out and Skiddily said, "Hey, sorry, but I have no door to close. Office is tense now. She still jabbers away, and I got earplugs."
Well, exactly. Well, that's a solution. But I'd think the bigger headline for that is okay, this woman is talking on the phone about her personal problems and her personal life all the time. It's really annoying. I understand it. Person who wrote in, but at the same time,
and she doesn't speak Tagalog, and so she doesn't even know what they're saying.
She doesn't even get the pleasure of overhearing. But at the moment when she's hearing about whether this coworker's daughter is maybe having a hysterectomy, is not the time to complain about the noise. So the headline to me here was, choose your moment. Maybe the daughter is about she's at the gynecologist and there's a big problem. Maybe after the call. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt it was super annoying while the call was going on, but that's not the best time to communicate with someone.
Well, some people understand this, and I'm always amused when I see people on their cell phones in hallways, in little nooks and crannies of the office, because they don't want to talk about personal things within earshot of everyone else. Of course, as I pass by, I hear some of it.
But
it's not the same. And I think those people are trying to be more considerate or trying to be more private.
But clearly,
not everybody's like that. I know all sorts of things about some people that I probably shouldn't know simply because they talk so openly.
Yeah, it certainly is. The other thing about workplaces, this is not a confederate of your friends. This is a random assortment of people that WNYC, or in my case, the New York Times, have decided are really going to be good as a group putting a product together and getting it out into the world. So we don't have to make friends with everyone. We just have to find a way to coexist peacefully. And so figuring out how to deal with the ever chattering office mate who in fact has a door that's really not going to be a problem. I think if the person with the complaint deals with it at the right time and in the right way.
My guest is Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column in the Sunday New York Times Style section. And we're inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-96WNYC. Or you can also go to our show page at WNYC.org or get in touch with us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. A number of people wrote in about the issue of people talking too long in one-sided conversations, like Anita from New Jersey, who says of a new support coworker, "He's very nice and does a good job, but tends to embark on a long monologue about his life whenever he engages me to ask a simple work-related question. It's not just the wasted work time, it's that I'm not interested in. When he starts talking, I feel trapped. Is there any way I can prevent this behavior without being rude?"
Yes. I think that I have two ideas. I have two ideas for Anita. The first one is to say, and no one can really object to this, "Bob, I'm super busy right now. Could we circle back around to this at 4 or 5 this afternoon?" I know, Anita, you don't really want to circle back, but that is a way to extricate yourself in the moment. But I want to make a bigger point, too, and that's when new people join the office and they're joining an already cohesive team, they can feel really insecure. And so some people will be really shy and they'll hang back and they won't jump in. Another approach that people have, and maybe this guy is that, or maybe this guy is simply Tony tone deaf and is always going to be a thorn in your side. But he can, one way of dealing with it is to sort of overshare and interrupt and insert yourself into things in hopes of becoming a member of the team. So maybe, even though you're not that interested, maybe inviting him to lunch a time or two or to eat with you in the cafeteria would not be the worst idea.
Along these lines, a listener wonders, what if you work in a place where there's an in crowd that you can't break into? David from Manhattan wrote in to say that he works in a 15-person office and five people are part of an extended family while he's in a minority, being an older white male who's only worked there for a year. He's never been asked to go to lunch with any of them despite making overtures when inevitably something comes up, or they say that he always brings his lunch anyway.
Welcome to my life, David. I have never been invited to the Vanity Fair Oscar party, and I sit ready every year by the phone to accept the invitation. But you know something? If you're an older guy, you've had time, like I have had, to understand that some people are going to like us, some people are not going to like us. You can certainly make an overture to one of these in crowd slash mean boy, mean girl folks and say, would you like to join me? If you bring in your lunch, you might even pack a little extra lasagna and say, I've brought some extra. Would you care to join me? But at the end of the day, we all cannot be the, we all can't be as popular as we'd like to be. It's always, and life, I think, is pretty much always about feeling like there's a really great party going on that we're not invited to.
You're always going to feel excluded. I just went to a gala. I've had this experience a number of times. The photographer looks at me, turns away, and takes a picture of the person next to me.
Exactly. Not TNT on the red carpet. I think that photographer is a fool, Leonard, and anyone who's not taking your picture should be probably
a radio person
sent to photographer jail.
And then you look in the Times, your newspaper, in the same section you're in, and it's always the same six people.
It's always the same. And guess what they have in common? They've underwritten the entire event.
A listener who wrote in under this name, Worker from United States, asked about offensive smells, not just lingering cigarette smoke, but too much perfume or cologne, body odor from someone who refuses to use deodorant, and also sounds, snapping gun, endless snacking and crackling on chips and snacks while talking with a mouthful of them.
Some people are really sensitive to sounds and smells. And I mean, I don't believe that anyone is smoking in the office in anywhere in the United States anymore. But, you know, perhaps I'm wrong about that in some states.
Oh, at R.J. Reynolds, I'm sure they're all smoking.
They're smoking in the hallways. Think, though, that if somebody goes outside and observes the company policy about smoking and then comes back and they have a sort of cigarette-y breath, that is the sort of situation where, yes, in an ideal world, that would not be possible. But I don't think there is, other than offering the guy a piece of candy, I don't think you have autonomy over this guy's life. He is smoking in a permissible way, and then he comes back to the office and has a lingering cigarette odor. I think it would be great if we could create a utopian workplace and everybody smelled exactly the way we like.
Yeah, but there are some people who should use deodorant who don't
use
deodorant.
And that and
can
I think
be
that's
really
even, and that's,
upsetting.
And that's really upsetting. And I also think that is a no-win situation for people who have – that is a situation where – if I worked on your show, Leonard, I would come to you or talk to somebody in authority about it, because peer-to-peer complaints about things so personal as smelling bad, bringing smelly food, which is often, is that code word for like an ethnic? Does that mean code word for ethnic? So if I decide your coriander or allspice is so smelly because I'm not familiar with it, better to let other people handle it. And if there is no other person, if you are a true confederacy of colleagues with no authority figure, I think we need to be really careful before you start talking to people about stuff like that, because you can really do damage.
But we also can start to be looked upon as a nuisance if we go to HR all the time.
Absolutely.
And say, this person does this, that person does that, you're the one who starts looking bad.
Absolutely. And in the number of letters that I've gotten from people who'll say they, in a very sweet way, told their colleague that, she smelled like poop on a stick. You know, how is that ever going to play out well? How could you ever have convinced yourself that, or people who say your perfume, it smells like a whorehouse in here. Well, that's never going to work. And I am very sympathetic to people who are sensitive to smells. But I think probably direct interaction with your colleague is it can be done, but it's one of those things where Leonard and I want to hear the concept and the context, and then we can talk you through it.
And we'll do that when we pick this up after we take a little break. My guest is Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column in the Sunday New York Times style section. Also has a regular series with some famous people getting together for
Table
lunch.
For three. And now I'm going to walk out, Leonard, so you can make all the money in the world.
Well, let's hope that
NYC
that happens.
Deserves it.
And we're back with Philip Galanis of the New York Times, who writes a weekly column called, what the heck are you calling it? You're calling it Social Cues.
The 73rd time of my visit, Leonard. I am
I read
shocked.
I read it every week.
Okay.
And I say, oh, Philip was spot on there. Usually, anyway, Philip. We are talking about the difficulties of working in, people who are working in workplaces, because interestingly, all of the things that were sent in were about working in an office. I would have thought a few people would have been concerned about working outside of an office, maybe even trying to work at
Starbucks.
At Starbucks or some internet cafe.
Right.
Working at home with the kids running around. One listener, Jean from Manhattan, brings up a situation where, as she says, I finally worked my way up the ladder and got an assistant. I didn't choose him. HR assigned him to me, but he's the most entitled kid in the world. Do I work with him or toss him back to HR?
Oh, I think when you have a chance to be kind like that, Jean, work with him. Work with him a little bit. So much of the time, what looks like entitled can just be either really shy or so ignorant. If it's his first job, that being an assistant is often a lot of our first jobs. My first job, I worked for Carrie Donovan, who was the fashion director at the New York Times Magazine a million years ago, and she would have these skirts, and she would ask me to take them to the cleaner to have lead or some kind of thing put into the bottom so that they would stay. My mother was not that kind of person, so I didn't understand any of that stuff, and I'm sure I made lots of boneheaded errors, but she was very generous and worked with me. And of course, now you'd never ask a kid to go to the dry cleaners for you. But
Are you sure you wouldn't?
No, I wouldn't.
There are some people out there who still do.
I'm sure there are people who do, but things like, I think that she has an opportunity to really help somebody, and when you have that opportunity and it isn't going to kill you, if he's not insolent or he's not lazy. But you give it a go. Give it a go a little bit. And also, HR will think more highly of you if you do toss him back after giving him a chance.
I work with a lot of people who come in as interns. This is often their first real job experience. And my feeling is that this is my opportunity to teach them. Some learn, some don't. At the end of their time with me, I know which ones are going to go on to have decent careers and which ones aren't.
Yeah.
But I hope that I have played a role in getting them to the point where they can function in an office environment.
It's an important way to think of yourself as contributing to the world, helping to make the people in a profession that you care about better.
Cheryl from Queens talks about a different kind of situation. She writes, "The nice young woman who sits at the reception desk in our office dresses like a tramp, as my mother would say. I want to help her get ahead. Can I say something?"
Right. Okay. So here's the fine line between here's the question, really, that I have for Cheryl is her real desire to mentor this woman and help her get ahead, or is her real desire to express annoyance that the girl is dressed like a tramp? And often we will pretend to want to mentor somebody when really we have just something to get off of our chest. And how people dress, I mean, the receptionist probably has a supervisor. And if the supervisor is not displeased with the way she's dressed, I don't think it's any of Cheryl's business. Now, that said, if Cheryl wants to really mentor this woman and the woman is interested in, her career advice that will extend to more than just how she's dressed, maybe she could try to create a relationship with her, but the opener should sure as hell not involve the word tramp.
I would love to hear from the woman at the reception desk. A lot of people do listen while they're at work. Our number here is 212-433-9692. If you want to write to us on our show page, just go to WNYC.org.
Or did anyone ever tell you were a tramp at work?
Yes. Well, it's interesting that a listener from Bayside wrote in, "I was going to unload like my fellow listeners, but you know what? Mostly I get to listen to WNYC from when I get in until I leave, so I guess it ain't all that bad."
That's true.
And then he points out that he pledged.
That's good. Yeah. That's a good thing. He's like the kind of listener we like. But it's true. And what you were saying to Leonard about people working outside of the office, a lot of people now are having to scrap together jobs and incomes and livings in ways that we didn't used to have to. And sometimes we people who work in offices can forget what a luxury it is not to have the pressure of piecing four jobs together to make a living.
Tom in California writes in.
Wow.
We have listeners all over the world.
I know that, but I love that he's up so early.
The other comments are unbelievable, Tom writes. Where the hell are the supervisors in these offices? So the question is, how important is good supervision? Do supervisors also have to walk that thin line that you've been talking about?
Well, absolutely, because I think that when companies need to contract a little bit, as they did, I mean, one of our big problems in the economy now is that lots of workforces contracted when the financial crisis hit and laid people off, and companies have been very slow to hire again. And often the people who were let go the most frequently were that, quote, supervisory level. And so a lot of people write to me that they don't have any supervisor in the office.
And then there are problems. I've had a few supervisors. Luckily, they're all gone now. But I had no respect for them. They were awful.
Right.
So, well, a lot at the of same time, they were making major decisions about my life.
And a lot of the time they don't come from the industry. They're not journalists or radio people. They're people who are in the business of supervising personnel. And so they sometimes don't get what's going on. But I agree, supervising is really important. And so much of the time, people will write to me that they've tried to engage their supervisor with a problem that they're having, and the supervisor just doesn't care about it. So that can make problems harder, too.
Or they send out weird messages. My first program director here, I got all excited when we got John Updike as a guest, and I went into his office and said, "We just booked John Updike." He said, "Why are you working so hard? You're going to get paid anyway." That was not the message I thought a supervisor should be giving me.
I know.
Susan from New Jersey complains about an office pariah who is self-promotional and frequently claims credit for actions that to the rest of us seem routine. In short, she's not fitting in with the culture and her work is substandard. We have no power to get rid of her. So how should we deal with this person?
Well, there were a lot of judgments, a lot of negative judgments in that statement.
You know people like that.
Yeah. And maybe they're true. Maybe it is absolutely true, every single one of them. But maybe that person hasn't, and her crowd with whom this new person is not fitting in, I wonder if they've really tried to be a little bit more accepting. Because if you don't have the power to get rid of this person, it would probably be better for you, even in a self-interested way, to figure out how to get along with the person than dump on her and get a little crowd going on who are really anti-Marjorie, because Marjorie sucks. We hate Marjorie. So I think the best thing to do would be to blaming the victim, and I'm going to say, suck it up for one day, and you and your colleagues take Marjorie to lunch so she feels good about working there. And maybe then she won't need to brag so much because she'll know that you like her, or she'll maybe start to think you like her.
Well, maybe she is ambitious and she really wants people to think that she's doing the best job.
I've worked with people who have who've taken credit not only for my ideas, but taken credit for everybody's ideas in the entire office when we were meeting with our boss, the big boss, and it's demoralizing. And dealing with other people rivalry is also a part of the office that we like to pretend doesn't exist, but it exists. Some people really want to get ahead. And if that means you stomping over you to get there, watch out, because the boots are already laced.
Paul from Milltown, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a comment about your speaker's caution about not confronting someone who might have an offensive body odor. And I have an experience that worked very well for me. We had a young man who had recently emigrated to the United States from a Middle Eastern country. His habit was very offensive. He rarely changed his clothes. He didn't bathe. And everyone asked me, I was not a supervisor, but they asked me to talk to him. I pulled him aside and explained to him that our culture is different than where he came from, and that we have habits of changing our clothes and bathing and men use aftershave. He thanked me very much, said he was totally unaware. A week later, he came, sat down next to me and said, "How do I smell?" I was stunned. I had forgotten all about it. But sometimes if you present the problem very gently, someone in that situation could be helped out very much without making a big deal with supervisors and HR.
Sure. I mean, I'm glad to hear it worked out well. I'm glad to hear it worked out that well.
It wasn't
that time,
guaranteed. The man might have taken offense.
But he might have taken offense, and I bet that you had an idea that this guy was going to be open to you before you started talking to him, rather than going flying totally blind, because it could just. I've gotten a lot of letters from people who will say they tried something and they thought they were doing it as gently as you did it, and it just didn't. It just didn't work out so well, but I'm really glad it worked for you and for that guy, too, because his life in the office is going to be much improved now.
Another listener in regard to the receptionist who the writer thought dressed like a tramp, Antonio from Bayside, suggests that Cheryl from Queens, pretend to show her something in a tasteful magazine to get her opinion on things as a way of reinforcing what she thinks is appropriate.
Exactly. No, I prefer hooker boots.
We haven't gotten into the whole issue of kitchens where people leave their dirty dishes in the sink all day, so it's hard to wash your own things. And then even when they do, they leave chunks of food in the drain, which clogs up the pipes. Is posting a note a way to go?
Posting a note is the way people do go. And the more screechy in tone the notes get, I think the more it becomes almost like bait to some people to behave really, badly. It's the kind of... it's the one kind of thing where this is the kind of thing where everybody has the same interest. So I think to talk to people as if you see something happening, it's really not. This is one area where I think being a Budinsky is just fine. Make sure to wash that because so I'll be able to wash mine when I'm done too.
Our office emails are often from people complaining that their food, like yogurt or drinks, have been stolen. And then sometimes it's a coffee mug, a stapler, a pair of scissors, or something even more personal. That can be a real problem because the person who's taken it will be kind of embarrassed to even admit it.
Right. And the other thing is that if you have something that means so much to you, it's again this fantasy that our offices are I love the people that I work with. I love the people that I work with. My editors are incredible, but I would never, leave my wallet just in the office kitchen and just expect it to be there when I got back. And so if you have something that you really care about, like a prized mug that was used to be your mother's, and then don't leave it around, because these are not your friends. These are just people you work with, and we might have friendly relationships with them, and they might indeed, some of them, be dear friends, but
they're still going to eat your sandwich.
They're still going to eat your sandwich sometimes. And so it's I don't know why, but they are going to. And so the angry memo is not going to, it's never going to lead to the replacement of your Greek yogurt. It just ain't. I'm really sorry.
Robert from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Richard.
Oh, Richard, I'm sorry.
Yes, that's okay.
Starts with an R.
My question to your guest is, it seems to me that you feel very worried about offending someone else when approaching them about either their body odor or the food that they're eating or whatever. We can offend people in many different ways in our daily life, and if something seems to be offensive to you, why do we have to feel so worried about approaching that person and just be diplomatic and nice and explain to them that what it is that they're doing is a bit offensive to us.
Okay, let's say I make a chicken with rice and cumin for lunch, and you don't like the smell of it. Who cares, Richard? I mean, I have the right to eat. Who made you the police of your cumin?
However, on the flip side of that, everyone also has a right not to be around anyone else that is eating something that has a very strong odor. We're all entitled to our own personal space.
But I don't think cumin.
Wait,
odor.
Can I jump in here, Richard? I think that there's another thing, and I've been listening to the way Philip deals with these problems, and that is, if you want to be effective in getting a thing changed, just storming in there like a wild animal is not, or, you know, saying, look, I'm very frank. And then you tell this person something that they find very insulting. They're not exactly going to respond well to it. They may change their behavior, but in the end, you are going to have a very difficult time dealing with that person.
It started, but I started what I had to say by saying it nicely and diplomatic. I didn't say storming in.
Right. But even diplomatically, Richard, which I really heard you say diplomatically, but the difficulty that I have is that I get hundreds of letters a week from people who think they've been diplomatic, and then all of a sudden there's an office feud. The next thing they know, there's an office feud going on. So what really, I'm not saying that you shouldn't speak to somebody. I'm just saying that before we speak to somebody, we should really decide that this is so important that we can't, that we really must, it really must be shared. And I bet my example, for example, of the chicken with the cumin on it is not going to be something that you're going to have to feel so strongly about, but you'd be surprised the number of things that I get. You know, people get upset with the smell of banana. So if somebody in the next cubicle is eating the smell of a banana and they don't like the smell of a banana, they want that banana gone. Well, wouldn't it be just easier to just go for a walk for 30 seconds while the person finishes the banana?
Some people are really direct. A listener on Twitter says, when I see dishes in the sink at work, I throw them out. No questions asked.
Well, see, that's the kind of, I mean, we are in a world where we feel really, really entitled to speak our minds. And my feeling is that honesty is always good. But as you said a little earlier, Leonard, I'd rather be effective than be honest. I'd rather that we all share the kitchen really nicely, and I figure out a way to make that happen.
The other thing is declaring war, really.
Yeah, throwing dishes away. That's really so aggressive. And what's it? It's not going to achieve anything good. It's wasteful and hurt. And yeah.
Do you know what your column's going to be next Sunday?
On this coming Sunday.
Yeah.
I do. It's about gossip.
Oh, great.
It's about a mother-in-law who gossips to her daughter-in-law, and the daughter-in-law has tried all these things to get her to stop because she feels so uncomfortable. So I have a few ideas about it. Throwing the mother-in-law in a big dumpster was not one of my ideas, however.
Philip, thank you so much for being on our show again. Philip Galanis writes the Social Cues column in the Sunday New York Times Style section. It's always a pleasure having you on our show.
It's always great to be here, Leonard. Thanks.